podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
You can't win anything with kids.
I will love it if we beat them. Love it.
Hello and welcome to this week's episode of the Phoenix 5, or rather the Phoenix 2. It's myself and David Graham today. How you going, Dave? You all right, mate?
Hello, Paul. Yeah, I'm all right, mate. You?
Yeah, not too bad. Obviously, the other lads aren't here today, which is no problem at all. Everyone just jumps on when they can, really, at the moment. We're looking a bit about your club, Fulham. But obviously, you're a Fulham fan, and I thought we'd start with them this week. So I want to talk to you about Fulham in the our fired years, basically, because obviously, prior to 97, you was in League Two and used to go quite a lot with your old man. What do you remember about prior to our fire taking over as a club?
Well, I might as well start from the beginning. I don't want to drag on a bit, but yeah... We've mentioned it before about when we've done a London Clubs episode. My first games were Sheffield Wednesday and QPR. Obviously, us living in West London, QPR was like a stone's throw. Well, especially for you, it was about a 10-minute walk for me. That was when they was in the Premier League back in when it first started as well. I used to get tickets off the soccer schools. We used to go in the summertime. And back then as well, you used to be able to pay on the gate. But it just never clicked for me. I used to go just watch football, but I never felt like my club. And then my dad just started taking me to Fulham. He's a Fulham supporter. He always has been. We started going on a regular basis. And they was in like the old second division, more or less rock bottom. And it just felt right. And then we started going every week and I became a Fulham supporter. But the season before I started going regular, they was bottom poor, I think. I can't remember who else that they were bottom with. But they were really struggling. That's the days when I went, Ian Brantford was the manager, and I remember loads of people outside the ground, buckets, collecting money to save the club. Jim Mill was the chairman then. I didn't know what was going on. I just came to see a game of football because I was obsessed with football back then. But yeah, we had Ian Brantford. On top of my head, the players there, any Fulham fans listening, remember Mickey Conroy. He's got a famous goal from the halfway line, but that was a couple of seasons later against Wickham. We had Darren Freeman. We had Terry Urlock, Tony Lange in goal. Duncan Jupp, which went on to Wimbledon, Mickey Adams, who became our boss as well. So yeah, we had some okay players, but yeah, it was a bit of a struggle, but yeah, all came good in the end because we got promoted the season I started going, lucky enough. I think we finished second to Wigan, if I remember right, and then that summer we went up, our fire took over. But obviously, being a school kid, I didn't really know the ins and outs of finances and stuff like that. I just thought it was some bloke just come to buy Fulham and didn't think much about it. My dad was, I remember my dad being excited at the time because it was, he knew Alfied as a money man from Harrods, and that was it, an Egyptian guy that had been around from the 60s and 70s and 80s. Our parents' generation knew who he was. I hadn't got a clue. And it was more or less ended up like a 5-year plan. I think we've done it in 4. So that was my early memories of Fulham, being a poor club, struggling, nearly going out of business, to then being one of the richest clubs outside the Premier League, mate.
Yeah, I mean, you were saying about where you were in 96, in February 96, when Al Fayed first was linked. I found a link in 96 where Al Fayed was linked to buying the club. And it took, I think, a year to get it all sorted at the time. But you were 91st in the Football League, which is the bottom of Division 3 at the time. And there was talk, I mean, in the early 80s, there was talk of you merging with QPR at some stage because the finance of the club was so bad. I don't know how much truth's in that. But I think it was 1986, I think it was, Fulham weren't in that administration, but there's quite a lot of financial problems around the club. And there was actual serious talks going on with merging with QPR, which obviously never materialised, luckily. I've gone back and looked at it just briefly, and I think you was almost the first, I know it's a term, a championship manager club. You know, where someone came in with some money. I think you were one of the first clubs to have that injection of money at a lower league to get from where you were to where you got to. I mean, you had Blackburn, we've spoken about enough times about Ewood Park and, you know, Jack Walker doing what he had to do there, and Newcastle, but they were either in Championship or Division One or in the Premier League where the money came in. So 97, now Fayed buys Fulham for 6.25 million, which is quite a lot of money. We don't, obviously, not knowing it then, but what do you reckon that was quite a lot of money back then? 6.25 million seems like quite a lot of money at the time for a
Division Two club. Yeah, no, I agree. It does, yeah. Division Two as well. You've got the Premier League, and then you've got the First Division, which is second tier. And then we were third tier. So, yeah, it's a lot of money. But you mentioned the Blackburn thing. Yeah, you're right. I agree. At that time, Jack Walker did buy them, I think, outside the Premier League. But the money started getting pumped in more when they were in the Premier League, wasn't it? From my memory, I haven't looked up on it. I know he bought a few players. They were a rich club outside of the Premier League, but not to the extent of Fulham was in the second division. I mean, a major coup, you mentioned there about the money, a major coup was we got Chris Coleman from Blackburn, to Fulham, established Premier League player, rifled with injuries at the time. Luckily, he came to us. And that was a big coup, that was. He dropped two divisions to come and play for Fulham. I don't know what the way situation was. I'm guessing he would have been matched or on better money at Fulham. I don't know. But yeah, when you start seeing players like Chris Coleman come down to Fulham, you think, oh, something's happening here. Something's going on here. And he became club captain and, First Division, Premier League. But yeah. Yeah, you don't know. Back to your original point. 2.6 million, did you say?
6.25 million.
6.25. Sorry, man, I misheard you. Yeah, yeah. Well, in today's money, it sounds like a pittance, doesn't it? But yeah, it would have been a lot of money back then in mid-90s. But yeah.
But I reckon if I went now to go and buy a equivalent of a League Two club now, I reckon I could buy a League Two club for 6.25 million now. You know, and you're thinking this is back in 97. It was almost overpaid. I wonder if it was the London club aspect. Again, you know, the term sleeping giants always used quite often. I wonder if they looked at this at the time and thought, actually, you know, you could have probably bought QPR or someone else, but you went to Fulham, which is a bit more of a project. I mean, in Division 2, you spent 1.1 million, which back in the day was like unheard of in such a low thing. You said about, obviously, Chris Coleman coming in. There's a few other players. I think Paul Pescolito come in as well for a transfer fee. And then, obviously, 98, Keegan comes in. Well, it was Keegan and Ray Wilkins, wasn't it? But Wilkins left quite soon into it. Am I right in saying that?
I think so. But from my memory, we had, when I first started going, it was Ian Branford, and we were just a shit club. Mickey Adams took over and he got us promoted on a shoostring. And next one, Al Fyde came in. Adams was still there, but I think I think Fulham fans might, don't misquote me, Wilkins came in, done a job, didn't get promoted. I think we lost to Grimsby in the playoffs semis, because I remember going to Craven Cottage and watching it on a big screen in the middle of the pitch. The second season, Keegan came in, Wilkins stayed, and then Keegan got us promoted. I can't remember if it was the first or second time, left for the England job, and then Paul Bracewell came in and we had a mixture from there. But yeah, that's right. Wilkins did manage this for a bit, but he failed at the promotion and Keegan came in and they were a bit like a double act, I think, Paul.
Yeah, I mean, again, that was in the area where you did get almost two managers. Borough had it with Venables and Robson. And there was one or two other clubs that had that dual manager role back then, which you wouldn't be able to do that now. But yes, you spent 1.1 million. You got yourself into which would be League One, which would be the Championship now. And then I think John Tagana came in, who won the league the previous season at, was it Lyon he came from? Am I right in saying Lyon?
You're probably right. I can't remember which French club he came from. I didn't have a clue. I just remember his name from the. That he used to play with Platini. I can't remember if it was the 82 World Cup or the 86 Euros or something. I just knew his name. I didn't know anything else about him. I didn't know where he'd come from, but you're probably right. Probably was Lyon or something. I know he came with a decent reputation.
Yeah, it was either Lyon or Monaco, but I know he won the French League the season.
Oh, yeah, I think it was Monaco, Paul.
Is it Monaco?
That rings a bell now, because he had Henri at Monaco with him. I'm sure he did.
Yeah.
Yes, it was Monaco. That's right.
Yeah, I knew it was one Monaco, mate. And they won the league that season. Then he came over to the again, so he's dropped from, you know, winning the league in the French league, yeah, to go to the Championship. So obviously wages comes into a point and there was obviously a long-term project. What do you remember most about Tigana in the early, getting yourself from the Championship to the Premier League? Is there much you remember about that season?
If I'm honest, you know me, through this puzzle, I love watching good football. I love watching players that can control the ball. I love the way they pass the ball. I like them to finish, don't get me wrong. This is what the issue I had with Scott Parker last season, but we won't get into that. but to be honest, me going to Fulham, I stopped going to Fulham in 2005 when I moved up to the Midlands. So I've seen a few managers between 1995 and 2005. But the best football, not necessarily the best team spirit, but the best football I've seen played was under Tigana, especially when we played at Loftus Road as well. Under Tigana, we were very hard to get the ball off. But the second season at Loftus Road, when he left, we dominated a lot of games. We just struggled to score goals. But the actual football to the eye was brilliant. Two touch, one touch. But a lot of it, you know, take it to the wing, push past it back. Instead of having a shot, it was more or less trying to walk the ball in, like trying to do an Arsenal at that time, but we're not good enough to do an Arsenal. And then obviously we had Louis Saha, but he left by the time, I think Coleman was there when we sold him, but that's another story. But yeah, for me, the Tigana question, Paul, actually going and watching Fulham, home and away, he's the best manager for football I've seen at the Cottage. Obviously, we've had managers since, as in, we had, we've had Hodgson, yeah, we've had Coleman, we had McGatt, Djukanovic, etc. We've had a few of that, but for me personally, best footballer I've seen is John Tigana's style of play. Well, very on the floor.
He came in and when he got promoted for his first season, and finished 13th, which is your best finish for over 30 years. Qualified for the Europe over there. Did you win the Intertoto Cup that year? Sure, did you win it?
When we was at Loftus Road, we did. Yeah, but when he took us up from the first division, we had over 100 points.
That's right.
Massive. Yeah, we had the highest points total ever in that division, I think, until Reading stole it. I think they won it by 100 and they beat us by a couple of points, I think.
But yeah, when we and you got 101, if I'm right. That.
When we got promoted to the Premier League, maybe it was the first season. We had a bye anyway because of the Fulham Craven Cottage had standing and it wasn't allowed in the Premier League or something. So we played two seasons at Loftus Road. But yeah, we used to go to the Intertoto games down at Loftus Road. We won the Intertoto and then went into the UEFA Cup. I always remember like QPR like having half of the UEFA Cup receipts and stuff. There was a bit of a hoo-ha about it. That's the financial side, but yeah, we had Sosho come down to Fulham, the French club. They weren't great sides coming down, but we had Inamoto as well. He pumped in a few goals. We got him from Arsenal, but yeah, it was like a 5-year plan, but they'd done it in four. So
yeah, I mean, Fulham at the time was you know, they as you said, it was the famous 5-year plan, done it in four, and then they sacked Tigana. Apparently, they sacked him. They weren't in danger of going down. So I think when they sacked him, I'm sure they were 13th or 14th in the league. But they sacked him because him and Fayad had a falling out because he was apparently overpaid. This is back in the days when the managers kind of said, I think he's worth this. And then they paid the fee for players. And there wasn't directors of football and all this other stuff back then. And they accused him of overpaying and pocketing some of the money. It was later taken to court and Fulham lost the case. And I think Tigana won a payout from Fulham in the end. But let's talk about some of the players that came in. I mean, again, I think if I'm right in thinking, I might be wrong, but it was around the same time the French Revolution that Wenger was doing. You had the same thing at Fulham at the time, or that kind of, was it Steve Marley, Malbranck? What was the other midfield? Was it
Legwinski.
Saha. You know, that must have been quite an exciting time as a Fulham fan. Quite, as you say, ball to feet, technical players. Technically, there were four fantastic players. What was it like seeing them play?
Saha was the best of the lot. Obviously, your lot coming and took him away from us because he was averaging a goal a game that season. Yeah, I remember that. He was averaging a goal a game. Legwinski was solid. He was not solid, but he was consistent. Malbranck was a great player. Marley, we have spoke about before in our flopped episode. He was the disappointment. I didn't know anything about him, to be honest. Remember back then, social media and YouTube wasn't really available, so you'd only sort of, I might have seen the odd clip of him on Euro goals or something like that, or read about him in world soccer, but I never knew anything about him. But he was supposed to be not as good as Henri, obviously, but he was supposed to be, like you said, a prodigy of French football, up and coming. He had like one good game in 10. When he did have a good game, he did look good, but for what we paid for him, I think it was like 10, 12 million or something.
11 and a half.
Yeah, it wasn't good enough. We had Facundo Sava, they signed in from some Argentinian side. I'd have played him every day of the week over Marley, and he cost probably a quarter of what we paid for him, Marley. So, yeah, it just didn't work out. Like we've said in the past about flops, but yeah, we had a few French players, we had a few flops as well. Francois Keller came in. We had Fabrice Fernandez as well. He was pretty good. He ended up going to Southampton. He was a decent French player. But yeah, it's a bit of a French Revolution, but sort of the B side compared to Wenger's French Revolution, you know. So yeah, they were good times, to be fair. They were good times, Paul. I went to watch Fulham, luckily, in that era, whereas my dad used to go and watch them in the 80s when they went to the second and third division.
So we'll talk about Louis Saha, because obviously United and Fulham have this few players that moved over, and Saha was our first signing from you. How good was he at Fulham?
I'll ask you a question with the question you've asked me. You remember when he had a loan spell at Newcastle?
Yeah,
in the Premier League.
Yep.
Yeah. So when he came to Fulham, I thought, I'm not sure about this one. Obviously, dropping a league. I think he scored one good goal for Newcastle. Didn't he? Then he sort of, like you say, he flopped and disappeared. Yeah. So I just took a pinch of salt. We signed a striker. Let's see how he gets on. And he was prolific in the first division. Then he was hampered with injuries. And then he had the season Man United signed him. He was averaging a goal a game. And I'll always remember this, Paul. Do you remember the viewers, the listeners might remember as well? There used to be a channel called Premiership Plus.
Yes.
It's like a pay-per-view channel. So you had your Sky Sports.
Owned by ITV, yeah.
Whoever it's owned by, it's called George Graham used to be on it, you and the punditry. And it used to be on. It was like you had to pay extra for it. And Man United had come in with a bid. I can't remember how much, you probably correct, but I can't remember how much it was. And Coleman was adamant. He's not going anywhere. We're not being held to ransom. He's a Fulham player. He's doing this, that, and the other. And back then, his head was turned. We played in Middlesbrough away from home. I think it was like a Monday or Tuesday night. I remember watching it. And Louis Saar, probably not the first example of player power, because we spoke about Van Hooydonk in the past, but a guy you could see, I'm not playing for you, Coleman. He was this guy that was scoring the goal of the game. He was just walking up and down, just kicking his heels, couldn't give a fuck. Coleman took him off. Can't remember when about he took him off, but he deserved to come off. You could see he was doing it on purpose. And I think maybe the Thursday night or something on Sky Sports News, along the bottom, breaking news, Louis Saar signs at Manchester United for, what was it, 10 million?
12.4
million. And that was that. Gone. Selling club. So, yeah, when you like some Man United coming for players from a team like Fulham, you're not going to turn it down, are you? You know? So, but when he was at Fulham, yeah, I've got no qualms about.
Well, you said that he arrived at Fulham having, like you said, a flop at Newcastle, right? Because at Newcastle, he went on loan from, it was Mets at the time, and he played, it was 11 games and one goal. But even at Mets, prior to that, he only scored 5 goals in 47 appearances. So he was never prolific. Prolific. When you signed him, it was still a bit of a risk, really, because he played in the Premier League, wasn't very good. But you signed him at 2.1 million at the time, which was, you know, a relatively risk-free amount of money, even in by that standard. And then when we went in for him, he scored 10... That season, as you were just talking about, he currently scored 10 goals in his first 11 games. And he scored 27 goals in his debut season. Do you remember he's the opening, your first game in the Premier League was against Man United, and it was a free
watching win.
And he scored 2 goals against us. I think he lobbed Barthez in one of the goals. Mm. And obviously we signed him midway through that season for 12.5 million. But he was just injured all the time. It's such a shame because I thought he was, if he stayed fit, he reminded me of Andy Cole a lot. He needed one or two chances.
Go on.
If he got a run at United, I think he's still loved by the fans, even though he only played about 80 games for us, actually, you know, started or had a part of, and he scored under 30 goals, but he's really loved at the club. He's got this affiliation that, again, injuries just really hampered his career. So do you remember that game, the opening game in the Premier League that season then with Saha?
Yeah, I do remember it. Yeah, I remember watching it home with my dad. That wasn't that season you signed him. That was when we had the Pizza Hut kit. We had him. He played a full season for us. Yeah. Then we had a bye and we moved to Loftus Road. And that's where his injuries came. And that's when Tigana didn't have him for very much. So we had like the likes of Marley, which weren't really a replacement for him. He was playing bit parts because he was so injured. And then he came back fully fit. Coleman was the manager then. That's when he started to kick on. And that's when you lot took him off us. But no, I've got no qualms of Saar at all. He's not world class. He's not great. I think he's a very, very good striker. I put him in a very good bracket. So
that's fair enough. I think when he started with us, I think his first 10 games he scored 7 goals.
Remember he scored on his debut for Man United.
Yeah, against
a free kick, didn't he?
Yeah, Southampton. It was a 4-3 win as well. Actually, we're talking about Louis Saar, but let's go on to someone else who in that game made their debut for Man United. Do you know who made his debut in the same...
If it's Fulham linked, it's got to be Van der Sar, is it?
No, it's not Fulham linked. This is not Fulham linked. It's just that we played them and we won 3-2. Saha scored 2, who we signed the following season. But a striker made a debut for Man United in that same game. And obviously, with Ronaldo making his debut this weekend or re-debut, I thought...
I don't know. Could be anyone.
Van Nistelrooy.
Oh, was it there? I thought he was there already, no?
No, he made his iconic debut that same game. He scored 2 against none other than Fulham.
I'm with you. Against Fulham. Yeah, sorry. I thought you meant against Southampton.
No, sorry.
Yeah,
he came in a year late. For us at United at the time, obviously, Saha come in the following season, but Rude came in a year later because he was supposed to come in the year before, got a cruciate ligament injury, and we were always still going to sign him. But we moved Sheringham on, and he came in with some pressure on him. How good, I mean, talk about Fox in the box, and we've spoken about him briefly in other parts of the show about your love for him and whatnot. Mm. But would you say he was the original Fox in the box in the Premier League? Would I be fair? Would you want to say in terms of he scored 21 of his 35 goals at home in his first season? And I think he scored in all of his career at United. I think he only scored one goal outside of the box. I mean, how good was Ruud van Nistelrooy?
Oh, for me, he was world class, Paul. For me, he was world class. I lost contact. Like I said before, I lost contact with you guys in the early noughties, and me and another mate, we was absolutely obsessed with him. It started off with his air style, his floppy air flop and all about. It was a silly thing, and then we started getting addicted to watching his goals because he was racking up the goal after goal after goal after goal. But yeah, when you say Fox in the box, a 6-yard box, I always remember Andy Cole from Newcastle. If you're talking about original foxes in the boxes in our era, I always remember Andy Cole in the 6-yard box. He was an original fox in the box for me. There would have been obviously players before him. How many goals did he score for Man United? So he's playing at the highest level.
50 goals around the 150 goal mark. And again, one was outside the box in his United career, which is unheard of. There's no other striker that I can, for Man United or for any other club that I can.
Yeah.
Maybe Lineker might have been an example, I'd say. But in the Premier League era, you said Andy Cole was a good example. But I think Andy Cole could also score all types of goals. Whereas Ruud van Nistelrooy, you'd never associate him with a free kick or a 30-yard screamer or a header. You know, they're just, it was something about him. And the reason why I mentioned him, I don't know if you saw Ronaldo's re-debut goal yesterday. He scored two goals. And the first goal he scored yesterday was a spill from the goalkeeper and a tap-in. And it is identical to Ruud van Nistelrooy's goal against Fulham in that 3-2 game. That's why I brought him up, because I was watching the highlights earlier. And it's just, at United, it's amazing. At any club, they're not round anymore, those goal hangers. In the 90s, a lot of players could score from all over the place, yes. But you always had someone that knew how to time a run or chasing a ball after a goalkeeper, which seems to have disappeared now compared to the 90s. Would you say that's fair to say, or do you disagree with that?
No, I agree. As you're speaking, I'm trying to think of one. But when you say Van Nistelrooy scored just one goal outside the box at Man United,
yeah,
I find that hard to believe, man. I know he scored against Fulham.
Well, this is what Ronaldo is now. I mean, when we re-signed him, a lot of people were going, oh, you know, he's going to be able to do it, blah, 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 blah. And I thought, well, no club has someone that just sits in the box anymore. And not only did that yesterday, but just it's nice to see a striker that's got... You know, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer United was someone who could score them kind of goals as well. It was the instinct of being in the box and just knowing where to be. But yeah, you just don't. I don't know why, and that's why I think Ronaldo in the Premier League, you know, more modern stuff, but we'll get 30 goals. But I mean, for me, when Saha, back into the topic, when Saha came to United, yeah, he played up something with Rude, and they complemented each other quite nicely. But you know,
yeah, Louis had pace though as well, didn't he?
He was very fast. He had a great first touch as well. Mm. And then obviously later on in down the line, we signed Van der Sar. I mean, how did that come about? How the hell did he leave to go to Fulham? I mean, no disrespect, but he was a world-class goalkeeper.
Mm. He's a bit like Henry, wasn't he? As in, he didn't have a good time at Juventus. Hated it there, like the move. And yeah, I don't know how he came to Fulham when you got... I don't know whether the top six or the top four at that time went in for him. I would have thought they would have done, but maybe the attraction of London, maybe Alfie said you can have what you want. I just don't know, Paul. I just remember him signing for Fulham on the back of the Sun newspaper, and I thought, wow, that's a great sign. Yeah, I'm happy with that. But then nothing more was said. Played fantastic for Fulham, and then once again, Man United come in and take him away from us. So, but that's, you've got to expect that sort of thing. It's going to happen now. It's going to happen in every season for a majority of clubs. You're going to have players taken away. You just got to, I think, make the most of them while they're there, or hopefully they make the most of the time at your club. You know what I mean? So, yeah, that great, probably one of the best players we've had as a name to come to Fulham, I think, in my time. You know, everybody else that they've signed, you either haven't heard of or have been sort of good, average, you know. So, Van der Sar, major coup, mate.
Yeah, I mean, when you got him, I remember at the time thinking, what? We were struggling for goalkeepers at the time. And then at Fulham, I remember he was just phenomenal. I mean, wasn't there a game at the back end of it? He saved two penalties in a row? Was it Villa?
Probably, Paul. I can't remember. You're probably right. Yeah, I know he's fantastic.
Yeah, so he saved two penalties. And he's just mad. And when he came to United, I mean, he was just, he fit like a glove.
But I
do also think if he came to United straight off of where, was it Juve he came from? Is that right?
Yeah.
If he came from there straight to United, maybe he would have struggled because the pressure being there, coming from Juventus, who he wasn't having a great time there. He lost his place to Buffon at the time because they paid 32 million for Palmer, and he came in and he was second choice, and that's why he moved on. He's only there for 2 years. As you said, he struggled quite a bit and then came into Fulham. And I wonder if that was why he didn't get a big club move, because, you know, he was out by Juventus, and maybe it was a bit like, oh, maybe he's not good enough. But going to Fulham allowed him to bed into the English game and adapt, you know, to the physicality of it. And obviously the rest is history, so to speak. Mm. So
I never thought of it like that. You probably got a point there. Maybe what you're saying, he hasn't, when he went to Juventus, he's not hitting the heights that he did at Ajax. Mm. So maybe there's something wrong with him now. He's not as good as he was. And obviously that theory proved wrong. But went to Fulham as a stepping stone, proved he was good enough in the Premier League, and then went to United and he won the Champions League, Man United, did he?
Yeah,
there you go, yeah. So he kicked on again.
And I wonder if the next project we're talking about, we're going to come off of Fulham slightly, but I think I always see Fulham as the first mould. And I said at the beginning, it used that Championship manager kind of thing. Right, we're going to, the project's a 5-year plan, take them from the bottom, win the Premier League, or get to the top of the Premier League. We'll spend some money, we'll buy names from other divisions. The second club to do that, which was, I was a bit older, and I think I was a bit more into football, but I understood the game a bit more, was Pompey. I think they definitely used the Fulham model of signing big players, bringing in a big manager, spending a fair, for their case, it was a bit more money than they could afford. With Fulham, luckily, financially, they've always been secure since Alfire took over. He did do that. Well, let's talk about Pompey then. Don't know if it was disclosed how much he paid for Pompey, but he took over in
98. Sheffield Wednesday as well. He went into Sheffield Wednesday, saying.
Yeah, he went up to Sheffield Wednesday. I think he paid £1 for that, though. I think that was it was saying silly because, you know. But, I mean, amazing how he was allowed to take on another club after the way he left Portsmouth in an absolute mess financially. But let's go on to that. So they got into the Prem. They had a run. They were in Division 1 and Redknapp was director of football. And then he took over from Graham Ricks. And again, it's Championship manager stuff. You look at their players now, right? Shaka Hislop, Gianluca Festa, Stone, Sherwood, and obviously a bit of quality in Merson. But do you remember Todrov?
Yeah, I remember Todrov up front. Yeah, he scored loads of goals, didn't he? The Bulgarian.
Yeah, I mean, he scored 26 goals in the Championship season when they went up to the Premier League. And Redknapp,
like a beaver, didn't he? Remember his teeth? Paul, go on.
Todrov on the Insta. Redknapp signed him at West Ham, but he flopped. And everyone, you know, Michael Abugas or Radichoye. But in the League One, he was smashing it. He scored goal after goal after goal. And he's gone down in folklore for them because he scored the winning goal against Burnley to take them up to the Premier League. And then sadly, when he got there, he was just injured. And they brought in Teddy Sheringham from, I think it was from Man United. Because they went Spurs, didn't they? They brought him from Spurs. And they brought in Yakubu, David James. I mean, their team was phenomenal. And it was Championship manager stuff. Sol Campbell. And then obviously they went on to win the 07-08 FA Cup year. But what else do you remember about their run in that period? I mean, one of your favourite players was there, old Nwankwo.
Oh, Kanu, he was. Oh, yeah, well done, Paul. Yeah, I was just going to say, all those players you mentioned there, it is clever for Mary. They're all experienced players. Every player you've mentioned there, bar Todorov, all experienced. They're well experienced playing in the Premier League, aren't they? Look, you've got Kanu there and Sol Campbell, two title winners. You mentioned Steve Stone, David James, you know, regular in the Premier League throughout the night. So they've got a bit of stability there, a bit of experience. I'm not surprised that they held their own, you know. I don't know too much about Mandarich's financial dealings, to be honest, so I'm not going to comment on that. I know that the players that they brought in were good players, not great players. But they've done, for them to win an FA Cup, I'd love for them to concentrate on the Cup and get a bit of silverware as well, you know what I mean? They played Cardiff. Was it Cardiff? In the final, was it Cardiff?
I think so. Yeah, I think.
They
beat.
Yeah, it must have been a great moment. I think it was called Cardiff. But yeah. No, I just remember them. I've mentioned it when we done the off the cuff episode about grounds. it's the best atmosphere. It's not the best ground I've ever been to, even though I'm a fan of the old ground. It's the best atmosphere I've ever been to. Their fans are amazing. For singing, they're absolutely brilliant. Yeah, I wouldn't say I've had a soft spot for Pulse, but yeah, I do remember them in the Premier League. They're a pretty tough side to beat, weren't they? Everyone liked watching them play. When you listen to radio stations back in the day and that, they always had, always talking about Portsmouth, Harry's side. But yeah, they were a breath of fresh air, I think, to the Premier League, Paul. Yeah, it's a shame, but now they're in League One, is it? They're in League One, so it's a shame what's happened to them. I'm lucky Fulham haven't gone that far backwards yet. So,
that kind of time, I think, as we said, Fulham were left in a better situation financially, yeah, in terms of the owners, whereas Mandrake, they had to then have a fire sale with, I mean, the FA Cup team, mate. I mean, Glenn Johnson, Sol Campbell, Distan, Lassana Diarra went on to Real Madrid, John Utaka, yeah, Krenkjær, obviously a famous Harry signing, Milan Baros, Papa Diop. I mean, it's a great team with obviously a lot of money was spent on that team, and then all of a sudden that season after, I think it was they won the FA Cup in 2008. They finished eighth, which was their best season, and then the following season is when the money troubles came in, when they were 14th, and then the following season they got relegated, and it was just down. It was like they went down to the Championship, then they finished near the bottom, then they got relegated, then they got relegated again, and it was just one thing after another. And this is where I said the Championship manager element, because it's like Mandrake came in, had again probably a 5-year plan to bring success to Pompey, which he did, arguably. And you have to, it would be really interesting to speak to a Pompey fan to find out. You said just then about, I wish we focused on the cup. Would you take an FA Cup win, a good European run, you know, a couple of years in the Premier League, but within 7 years of that, you go down to League Two? Would you rather have had their memories and won silverware? Because at the end of the day, it's about winning silverware. Or would you rather be a club a bit like Fulham, who've gone up and down and kind of never really had a good cup run, apart from the obviously UEFA Cup run, had an Intertoto Cup run, as we said, early days. But what would you rather as a fan have?
That's a hard question, isn't it, really? I think someone from my dad's generation would have the silverware, because they used to have been in the low leagues. I saw them in the low leagues really for one season, and I was lucky enough to watch them win trophy after three trophies on a trot, couple of promotion, playoffs and that. So I'm used to the trophy aspect, really, and I'm used to them being, they remember they was in a Premiership for a good 10 years before they got relegated the first time, just after the noughties. So I'm used to success, if you want to call that success, really. Yeah, I'm used to the success. The generation now would say definitely not. I want Fulham in the Premier League year in, year out. But I suppose my heart of hearts, I am sort of traditionalist, Paul. I do like silverware. I like trophies. I love the old FA Cup. So, yeah, I probably would go for a good cup run. Well, we had, just saying that, we had a good cup. We got to the final of the UEFA Cup, remember? Mm-hmm. So that was a good cup run. I think the semis of the FA Cup is the closest we've got since 75. So, being a traditionist, I'd go for an FA Cup win, a bit of silverware, day out at Wembley. Silverware, I've said it now. Silverware over the Premier League for me, yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting.
Not stopping in the lower leagues, don't get me wrong, we'll come back again, but pretty soon. But yeah, no, I do like silverware. That's the point of it. When you look at players' CVs and managers' CVs over the years, and they had this team and they had that player, you know, and you have a look, but they haven't won anything. Got nothing to show for it, really. So yeah, no, I'd say silverware, mate.
No, it's an age old question. I mean, we said, I think, in the FA Cup one before about what's more important. Is it? It's like Wigan when they won the FA Cup but got relegated, and it was kind of, and obviously they've been on a downward trajectory since again. But you'll never be able to take that moment of every player's got an FA Cup winning medal. The fans who got to go to the game will never forget that. There'll be stories told for years and years and years. And unfortunately, with the Premier League, again, compared to now, we do have to use now as a comparison. Pompey, Wigan, you know, I think Burnley's an exception as a team now that you would say. You always associate Burnley and Wigan and those with lower league teams. It's usually a bit like Fulham.
That's right, because they were.
Yeah, and then it almost feels like, right, well, we've got into the promised land and we just want to stay there. We don't want to come out of that. And it doesn't matter about the cups. And you're thinking, well, surely you want to win a cup, because I don't understand, and we are talking about modern football, but it does go back a bit as well. I've never understood why teams, forget, you know, when you get into the Premier League, I understand if you're getting up for the money for the first season, but go for the cups. Every team should be going for cups, because at the end of the day, it's a bit like the Harry Kane thing now. Everyone's going, well, should he move on, blah, blah, blah. At the end of the day, your career is short, and it's not about how many appearances you've got or how many goals you scored or what goal of the season you've got. It's about what's on your trophy cabinet at the end of a season or the end of your career. And I always find it interesting, and we've spoken to pros about it, but I always find it interesting that clubs and managers don't prioritise cups. I just find it fascinating.
Do you think it's managers though, Paul? Do you think it's owners? Because from a big business point of view, going to the lower leagues and just winning the FA Cup or the League Cup, it's not enough for them, is it? But from a fan's point of view, you want to see success, as in silverware. So I don't know if it's always the manager, but then I don't know. You don't know what goes on behind closed doors, do you? I mean, look, are you talking about the team lineups that they put out? Which goes to show that they're not interested in winning silverware. They just want to concentrate on stopping in the Premier League.
Yeah. You know? I mean, Championship clubs now, I think we said in the previous podcast, I think me and Midder spoke about it, and were saying that Championship clubs are putting out reserve teams in a League Cup game against another a Championship or a League One team. And you're thinking, because all they want to do, and I think it comes from the top. I think it's the owners of the club, quite rightly so, because again, we've spoken about it. Football's a business. They want to be as successful as possible. And success now isn't winning a League Cup or an Intertoto Cup or this UEFA Conference. Success now is getting in the Premier League and getting the money that comes with it. But let's move on. I mean, the ultimate club, and this will be the last club we bring into it now in terms of, we refer Championship manager quite a lot. This was the one, I think, you had Fulham, then you had Pompey, and you had little places around it. I think you have Real Madrid with a Galactico situation, which is that Championship manager kind of format. But Real Madrid are a massive club. Then you've got Chelsea. You know, the famous story we've all heard, you know, flying over a helicopter, looked down, tried to buy Wembley. No, that's not. You can't buy that. Tried to buy Spurs. And then you end up buying Chelsea in 2003. You know, that was a team that was mid-table most seasons, had some good cup runs. But they came in, and then, boy, did they sign players. I mean, what was that? We was in school at the time, and it was just every time it was in the back page on Teletext, Chelsea have signed this player, Chelsea have signed that player. What do you remember about that period?
Yeah. You're now on the head there, Paul, really. When we spun down the London Clubs episode, we spoke about Chelsea in the 90s. They were a nothing club. They were never mentioned. It was all Arsenal, QPR, the early years. Like you said, they had the good cup runs. They won some silverware. They won the UEFA Super Cup as well, I think, the Cup Winners' Cup. So they did win silverware, but when it comes to kicking on and challenging for leagues, they were nowhere near Manchester United, even Newcastle and Arsenal. So, yeah, the back of the Evening Stand, I remember that story. It was around about that, wasn't it? He came over to buy Spurs or Wembley, couldn't have it, and, you know, just said he had Chelsea, and it just fell into, you know, it's just luck, isn't it, really? It sounds like just luck. Threw his millions at it, wanted to make... I don't know if it was a making money process for him, because I couldn't see the profit in it, but I'm not business minded, so maybe it was just to get Chelsea into the elite league, I suppose, win the leagues, win silverware, attract the best names, being in London, that's where it's happening. I just remember it happening so quickly, maybe, should I say. I remember the Mourinho winning the Champions League with Porto and taking his medal off, and I think everyone watching that game at night, especially British people watching it, say he's off to Chelsea. Is the next thing you know, he was doing that special speech, and the rest is history. And like the players that he signed for a ridiculous amount of money, continuing today with an open checkbook.
All right, well, let's talk about Roman. He comes in 2003, buys Chelsea for, ends up being 140 million. When we spoke about Fulham being bought for 6.75, you know, only 7 years before. Chelsea, he comes in, 140 million in total with all buys. First season, they spent £121 million. Damien Duff for 17, Heron Crespo for 17, Claude Makélélé, Juan Sebastien Veron from us. I mean, which was grateful, because 15 million for Veron at the time, we were paid 28 for. I mean, it was daylight robbery for us. It was amazing. But their wages was the interesting. They had £114 million wage bill that season. And they finished second. Claudio Ranieri was replaced as manager by Jose Mourinho, as you said, after the Porto thing. That always stuck with me a little bit with Claudio, because he came in and was doing a decent job. He finished second only to the Invincibles that season, which was like, you know, no one was going to beat them that season. They got knocked out by Monaco in the Champions League, and then he was on his arse. And obviously they brought in Jose, was a bit more of a a fancy name, where he brought in Drogba, Carvalho, Ferreira, Aaron Robin, but they went on to win the Champions, the Premier League that season. I mean, this was, as I said, Championship Manager stuff. Their first team, do you reckon you can name the first 11, but any of the players that started Roman's first game compared to his later on, like the players he had in the team?
I'll have a guess at the top of my head. So I'll go check in goal.
No, but prior to Roman coming in. So Roman's first game came in, and it was Claudio Ranieri's first Premier League game. What was the lineup?
Blimey. Okay, then. So I'm thinking Cudicini in goal, was it?
Correct.
He must have had John Terry, must have been there at the back with Frank LeBoeuf.
No, Desailly.
Okay. Right back. Dan Petrescu, right back? No.
Ben Johnson.
Oh, okay. Left back. Ooh. No, don't know left back.
Wayne Bridge.
Oh, God, yeah. Lampard.
Yeah.
Obviously.
Jesper, someone.
Remember? Oh, Gronkia.
Yeah.
Jesper Gronkia. Yeah, now did you have Sutton up front then? Was it, or was that a bit earlier?
No, it was Adam Miller's favourite striker. Do you remember who that is?
Who?
Ida Gunn-Johnson.
Oh, good Johnson, yeah. Now, without anything in front of me, I'm struggling now, Paul, yeah. Johnson, I remember, yeah. I was thinking of bloody Paul Ince and Joe Cole with him. Johnson, yeah. Now looked, I do remember now.
Yeah, and then literally 3 years later, it was
Jimmy Floyd Hasselbank.
He had gone by that time, I believe.
Oh,
I think he went to, I think it was Leeds or Borough. But you had Wright Phillips, Essien, Shevchenko, Crespo, Carvalho, Aaron Robin, Drogba. You know, in the space of 3 years, they literally changed nine of the players. Cech came in, I think, a little bit later. I mean, that you talk about money in football. I know it's a shame Holland's not here because he kept talking about Man United buying the league, and it's being used with Man City now almost. But that has got to be the biggest example outside of Blackburn of a team literally buying the league. I mean, it's mental.
Yeah.
And now
it's not what you can say really, because that's basically what it is, isn't it? Someone's thrown a buckload of money at them. You've got an open checkbook, go and buy who you want and we will win. So it's something we haven't really seen. Like you say, Walker's money is a pittance compared to Roman's, but obviously that's inflation as well. Times, you know, even between the early 90s and the early 2000s, the money, transfer money had changed dramatically. So yeah, that's probably the perfect example of somebody literally thrown. And it's still the same today, isn't it? Nothing's changed. It's just more clubs doing it. More clubs competing to do it now. So there's a lot of not just millionaire owners, but billionaire owners.
Well, state
so Fulham's an example as well. Yeah. Our owners are billionaire.
Yeah. Well, the final question.
Millionaire owners, didn't they? Multi-millionaires, but now we've got billionaire owners. So.
Well, you've got state
funding. What are the next trillionaires?
PSG, you know, they're state-run countries that are running clubs. The final question I would say then is, as a fan of Fulham, who again had a we've put them in that bracket because we started on the journey with Fulham about how they, you know, the money in football, how it came in, the Championship manager spending, and the, you know, paying 1.1 million in Division Two. But do you think there's a bit of resentment now towards these so-called elite clubs and having the open checkbooks, or do you just think it's part and parcel? Because if you're let's go down to a Gillingham, as you said earlier on, or a Barnet, an owner can't come in now and invest the money that would be needed to invest to get to the heights of where Chelsea and those are, because the EPL and all the other stuff. And people are going, it's good because it's trying to level the playing field. But it isn't. It's just closing the door to everyone else being able to do it. Newcastle is a great example, run by Mike Ashley. He's been trying to sell the club for God knows how many years, or allegedly. These Saudi Arabia lot have tried to come in, but the move's been blocked by the Premier League. But it hasn't. They've been blocked by the elite in the Premier League. Your Man United, your Chelsea's, your Arsenal's. They've blocked it because they don't want another billionaire coming in and turning Newcastle into another Man City. But as a lower league club, is there any resentment in that?
Oh, I don't know. Resentment, no, definitely not. Be a bit sort of calling the kettle black, if you like, because we more or less did it, didn't we? You know, if without our fives money, we wouldn't have got to the Premier League in 5 years. We'll probably still be... We might have had one season in the Premier League. I don't know. No, there's no resentment whatsoever. I just think times change. You know, times do change. People say, you know, to me, it's not just a cliche thing, but I like the 90s. I actually got a lot of love for the 80s music and stuff like that. People say, oh, you live in the past. Well, I don't live in the past. I live in the present. But I miss things from the past. And I appreciate things from the past. You know, there's a big difference. But yeah, look, things change. I suppose in 20 years' time, Paul, we look back at today's football and think certain things that are going on. Did that actually happen compared to, you know, 2040? God, that was a pittance. Is that all they pay for that club? Is that all they pay for that player? You know, no. The original question, do I have any resentment? No, not at all, because Chelsea were probably the first club to do it to an extent, obviously Blackburn, but they won't be the last. So it's going to... Here's the thing. I mean, years ago, on the Sky Sports, Charlie Nicholas said one thing. It's all stuck with me. He said, in years to come, all those 20 Premier League sides are all going to have billionaire owners. He says, and we speak week in, week out, what goes wrong here, what goes wrong there, why is this player not doing this, why is that team not doing that? He said, three are going to go down. Three billionaire owners that have spent millions and millions are going to get relegated. What excuse are they going to use? Because we've done the too good to go down thing, but the money spent should be going down.
That's
so where do you go from there? You're going to, so that money's going to go into the Championship then?
Well, I mean, that's...
And then is the Championship going to be full of million billionaire owners? That's what I'm saying, but that's what I mean by times change, you know?
Yeah, you're right, because that's already happening. I think when COVID hit, one of the things being banned around was these Championship clubs with their bowls out to the government or whatever it would be, the sporting people. And the combined wealth of the Championship was unbelievable. I think they had, the 20 clubs that are in it, I'm probably wrong on this, but it's near about, I think 12 of the 24 clubs in it had millionaire owners. I think two were Stoke were owned by Bet365, which is a billion pound company. And this is happening. I think the difference is now is the Championship have different rules to the Premier League, which makes it a bit, it's so competitive as it is. But I'll use, with, I just said we'll finish off, but I just want to bring in QPR. And again, Harper's not here, which is unfortunate. But I think they were the first club outside of Pompey that actually spent a bucket load of money and still went down under Tony Fernandes when he came in. They spent absolute tons of money when Redknapp was there, and they Rio Ferdinand came in, Joey Barton came in, and they went down. And I think Tony Fernandes had to write off £180 million in loans, personal loans, towards the club because of that. So just throwing money at it isn't always the option, you know, but 9 times out of 10, you're successful if you can sustainably throw money at something consistently, like, you know, all these clubs do, because you sign players for silly money in the hope they don't work out. And if you don't, you just replace them because you've got the money to do so. I think we'll leave it there. I think that we've covered most of the things on I don't think we should call this episode the Championship Manager episode.
I think Rice at the Top would be a good one for this, Paul. At the Top.
That's a good one, yeah.
So that's basically what we spoke about, haven't we? Teams that have been skinned are in the lower leagues, making their way up to the Prem and either stopping there or getting relegated. So,
I really enjoyed it, Dave. Hopefully, you've got anything planned for the week? Anything coming up?
Well, I'll be planning the quiz for next week. Hopefully, the rest of the lads will be turning up, so I'll get my questions ready. Apart from that, same as usual, mate.
So, yeah, stay tuned and we'll see you all next week.
Lovely. See you, mate. Bye bye.
Sports Social Podcast Network.